WNYC Studios is supported by the community of writers, presenting live online short courses in the Writer's Annex. Upcoming in 2024, Sylvia Plath, James Joyce's Ulysses, and Emily Dickinson. Instructors include Victoria Chang, Robert Haas, Brenda Hillman, Peter Orner, and Matthew Zapruder. Learn more at communityofwriters.org.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Now, if you've ever had a home health aide or you've had to arrange home care for an elderly parent, here's somebody you might want to know about. Ai-Jen Poo is the director of the National Domestic Workers Alliance. For her, the issue is not just better wages and working conditions. That's important. But she's also asking all of us to change our attitudes and our policies about these kinds of arrangements. And there's a real sense of urgency about this, given how many of us in the baby boom generation may be in need of home health care before too long. She's written a book called The Age of Dignity, Preparing for the Elder Boom in a Changing America. Ai-Jen Poo spoke with The New Yorker's executive editor, Dorothy Wickenden.
So one thing that struck me is that you work with two groups that have become almost invisible in this country, the elderly and the workers who care for them. And I just wonder, what inspired you to pursue this as a career?
Well, I had the great fortune of being raised by my grandparents. So I grew up watching my grandfather practice Tai Chi in the mornings in the driveway, my grandmother teaching me my values, but also very practical things. She potty trained me. She taught me how to speak Chinese. And so my grandparents just played such a huge role in shaping who I am today. And their care experiences really informed my choices to take up this work.
And you were raised by your grandmother because your mother was working?
Yes. So when my mother first came to this country and she had me, she was working, she was learning English, she was in school all at the same time. And so I actually spent early years living in Taiwan with my grandparents. And then later on, my grandparents actually came to the United States to take care of my sister and I.
And is your grandmother still alive?
Yes. My grandmother still lives independently in her own apartment and is still very engaged in our family life and in the community, and I'm so fortunate that that's the case.
One of the things you say is that the country's fastest growing demographic is people over the age of 85, and usually people are not prepared.
That's right. My family didn't have a plan, and what ended up happening was my grandfather, when he lost his vision, my father had to place him in a nursing home against his wishes. And that experience of visiting him in the nursing home stays with me to this day. I remember he shared a room with six other people. Half of them were completely still and unmoving, the other half in extreme amounts of suffering. My grandfather hadn't slept or eaten for days, and he begged me to take him from there and bring him home. And I do think that for many, that has been the dominant model, the nursing home model, where it is a very cold institutional context where you don't have control over when you eat, when you sleep, who you share a room with. I mean, there's so many basic things. What does it mean to live when you don't have the ability to determine how you live? And so what I'm thinking we're going to have to do is actually have a conversation as a country about how we prepare for the growing aging population in this country. And I do believe that planning and thinking ahead is a huge opportunity to address a number of challenges that we've needed to address for some time.
How do we do that, though, given the fact that this is pretty much a taboo subject until, as we've said, we actually have to talk about it? It's part of our terror of dying. It's part of our fear of getting older and of disease. How do you change what has become for many generations in this country just a way of of dealing with something we don't want to deal with, putting them away in nursing homes, where, by the way, it is not cheap. This is an expensive way of caring for the elderly, even in the most rudimentary nursing homes.
Exactly. Time and time again, it's been proven that aging in community in our homes is a much more cost-effective way to live, and it's much, much more affordable than institution-based care.
But will it remain affordable if these workers are being paid as much as they certainly deserve to be paid?
It is absolutely a challenge to think about the finances of caregiving. We're one of the only developed countries that provides no support whatsoever for child care or elder care. And it's really left up to individuals to figure out how to make it work. There's this myth out there that Medicare will cover long-term care. And it's just not the case.
No, it isn't. I discovered that myself, among many of these other things, is you don't learn about it until you're dealing with it.
Right. And so your only options are to completely deplete your assets and your resources and get on Medicaid, or to purchase very expensive long-term care insurance, which oftentimes doesn't cover what you need when you need it. And for the millions of us for whom those two options don't actually make sense, there's really nothing in place. And I think it's an opportunity, because what's ending up happening is we're paying for this in incredibly inefficient and ineffective ways. For example, the average private room stay in a nursing home is over $150,000 per year in New York. I mean, that is unimaginable for the 27 million people who are going to need care by the year 2030.
And that doesn't even take into account the medical bills.
Right. And when we talk about the medical bills, what we are finding is that we can actually save the healthcare system a tremendous amount of money if we actually provide good home care on the front end. The best prevention is actually good care. If you have a trained home care worker supporting you, you can better manage chronic illnesses. You can keep people with dementia and Alzheimer's out of expensive institutions for longer. You can keep people out of emergency rooms and prevent unnecessary readmittances. I mean, when you have trained caregivers who actually have the ability to provide the kind of quality care that this job is about, then you can actually save billions of dollars in the healthcare system.
That's the one argument that Congress may be receptive to. Do any of these issues, or any of these issues addressed in the Affordable Care Act?
There was an attempt to address them in the Affordable Care Act through a measure called the CLASS Act. And it was decided that piece of the Affordable Care Act would not move forward. But there are many advocates who are trying to figure out, how do we revive that piece in a way that's economically viable? And one thing that's exciting is we're working on a measure in the state of Hawaii, which would create the first in the country social insurance fund for long-term care. And what that means is that every Hawaiian, universal, there's no income requirement, but every Hawaiian would have access to up to 365 days of economic support of up to $70 per day to help them pay for the care that they need. And it's really biased towards a home care model to really support people to be able to stay in their homes and in their communities. So it's a really exciting innovation that Hawaii is really taking the lead on, and we're starting to get interest from other states to figure out, could this work in Maine? Could this work in Minnesota or other places where states are trying to get ahead of the curve?
And do you have Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton? It does seem as though this would be an issue that Hillary Clinton would be very receptive to. Has she responded?
Her campaign has released some very strong principles around caregiving. And I don't think that the other candidates have yet have addressed caregiving directly yet. And one of the things we're looking towards is actually the 2018 midterm elections, when the electorate that comes out to vote during midterms skews a little bit older. And we think that that will be a really interesting opportunity to engage voters and really try to elevate this issue as the defining issue of the midterm elections in 2018.
Interesting. Did you try to do that in the last midterm election?
No, but we did some pilot experiments to really test whether this could be something that people are moved by. And we found that indeed it is the case. In rural parts of Ohio and in New Hampshire, people are ready to talk about this.
So, Jen, do you ever get discouraged? The change is so slow coming, and yet you are so hopeful. And I hope there are many more out there like you. But how do you keep going when you have, you know, a bad day, a bad week, a bad month?
You know, I am so inspired and energized anytime I'm in a room with caregivers. I mean, their job is to go to work every day and focus on how to uphold the dignity of the people that they're caring for.
You know, I interrupt you just for a second? Because it suddenly occurred to me, I had a somewhat different experience than this. My mother had a stroke a number of years ago and has dementia. And so I tried having a home caregiver for a little while, and I constantly felt caught between the complaints of my mother and the complaints of the caregiver. And sometimes there's a racial tension. You know, they don't like the way they cook. The caregiver feels that they're being discriminated against. It's a very tough thing to negotiate.
It can be, absolutely. And, you know, there's a whole host of reasons that is true, and there's lots of dynamics to navigate. I mean, we're talking about families, and so there's already a lot of complexity within the family dynamic, and you add in a caregiver oftentimes who has their own family and their own pressures and their own stresses, and it is a pressure cooker for everyone, especially if somebody is aging or has dementia and there are changes happening that feel incredibly unsettling. And then you also have a situation where there are no training standards for home care workers and personal care aides. And so a lot of people are entering into situations that they haven't been prepared for, which is why I'm a big advocate of really figuring out how we prepare this workforce and equip them with the tools and the skills and the ideas for how to navigate all the different complexities and what to expect, including the cultural competency issues and navigating cultural differences inside of a home.
Aijen, thank you so much.
Wonderful talking to you. Thank you for having me.
Aijen Poo, the director of the National Domestic Workers Alliance. Her book is called The Age of Dignity, and she spoke with Dorothy Wickenden.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society, by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom, essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.